Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about Australia's ban on social media. What happens when a generation grows up with the entire world in their pocket, but no one's really listening to how that feels? Good, bad, or indifferent? Last season, I spoke with Raquel Boris, Gen X mum of two Gen Z kids. She's a youth advocate and professional bridge builder between generations. When Raquel joined me last year, she said something that I just can't shake. They understand they have access to all this information and they're struggling with it. They feel lost. We can't just point the finger at Gen Z. They didn't create social media. We did. Now, since that first conversation, Raquel has taken that responsibility to another level. She set out across America to listen, really listen, to young people, 18 to 26, filming raw, honest conversations for her upcoming documentary, I Hear You, Gen Z. Oh, Raquel, every time I see you, it makes me smile. It's so good to have you back on the program, and I can't wait to hear how your filming experience went. What happened?
Well, fast forward to July 22nd, and we're in an RV, starting out in San Diego, on the road for 2 weeks, traveling across 13 states, filming Gen Zers that I had lined up from my podcasts that I had in the past, like guests that I knew that I would want on my documentary. And I all knew the path we were going to take. So I knew, okay, these people are in Texas. Oh, this person's in Colorado. This person's in Louisiana. And just made my way up to Virginia and ended filming on my 50th birthday in Northern Virginia. And I wanted to end it there because my kids were going to be there. My Gen Zers, my two best favorite Gen Zers. So on my 50th birthday, I got to wrap up filming and then celebrate my 50th with my, not only my kids, but one of my best friends flew out from California to surprise me. You know, when I was telling my parents and my kids that, hey, I'm going to be in an RV with two strangers that I've never met until the day that I pick them up. I literally picked them up from the airport the day before we went to pick up the RV and just start driving. So everybody also thought I was pretty crazy in that respect. But after seeing them in the documentary, having all these conversations via Zoom, I felt like I knew them and I knew that we were going to be fine. And let me tell you, we got along great, Kim. There was never any like issues. It never was uncomfortable. There was never any like getting annoyed with someone because they did this, or there were no disagreements. It was just so fun. Like just that experience in itself. And then getting to see the country.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel so incredibly blessed just to have that experience. Like whether or not whatever happens with the documentary, just that in itself was just one of the best experiences of my life so far.
What do you think you learned about yourself?
Well, it's funny because a couple days ago, so I saw the first cut on Saturday. So I saw it for the first time, like just something for the first time. And at the end of it, I picked up the phone because I wanted to document like how I felt in that moment. And what happened was, is I said something out loud that I don't think I've ever said, or at least not very often, because it made me tear up when I was saying it, was that I was really proud of myself because I did something and I completed it, and I did it in a way that I felt honored myself, the filmmakers, the Gen Zers, you know, just knowing that for them to put themselves on screen and be so open and honest And really, a lot, some of them were incredibly vulnerable with just their stories or just what they're experiencing and just how they feel. I just was very proud that I was able to create a connection with them in a way that they felt safe and they felt like they could trust me. And that's not easy. And so, again, I was proud of myself for that as well, because, you know, it's difficult with that age group for them to really trust an adult with sharing their, you know, just who they are. And the other thing too, and this is something that I mentioned to my therapist, and it might sound kind of lame, but it's a thing. When I watched the film, I didn't criticize myself of how I looked, because just how I am now, my hair was up in a bun, no makeup. I mean, we're traveling. Like, I don't have glam. I don't have someone doing my hair or doing my makeup. Like, I wanted to be as authentic too, of like, if I'm traveling RV, I'm not going to be looking a certain way. I'm going to be super comfortable, just, you know, like just me. And I think a lot of people would have made sure that they looked a certain way if they were going to be on the big screen, if you will, or try to have lost, you know, a certain amount of weight before, you know, us women, like, oh, I got to lose some pounds and I got to look like this and oh, I'm turning 50 and the wrinkles. And I was like, screw it, I don't care. And then when I saw it back, I was like, that's what I look like. And, you know, I might have had a roll here and so whatever, my hair, this, and I didn't care. And it might sound a little, you know, kind of dumb, but that's a kind of a big deal for me, because I've always been someone that's been really critical of just my looks too. And so to not care, that was a big deal for me as well, to be like, so be it.
I love that you said that, because the world is so full of people who want to look perfect. And whilst you do online, there's a big difference to what you see in reality. So the fact that you've wanted to be authentic and available for the people you were speaking with, that it didn't matter what you looked like, you've shown up. I think that's amazing. That's one of the best things I've ever heard a woman say. So Raquel, I'm so proud of you as well.
Oh, thank you.
What surprised you about meeting them in person, and how did it change what you thought you knew about them before?
I didn't expect that it was going to go as smoothly as it did, with the fact that I anticipated that some of them would flake on me. Some of them wouldn't show up when they were supposed to show up, because I had to make sure that we were on schedule, because I had only a certain amount of time. The RV, we only had a certain amount of days, you know, so we had it. I had to have it where if I'm leaving California, I got to get to Arizona at this time, this day, and then meet this particular Gen Zer at this park. So that in itself, all the logistics, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know. I hope that they really respect and honor that that's like what I need them to do, right? So I was shocked when they all did. And then secondly, too, a lot of times when they would show up, we were at a park and we realized that we needed to kind of move the equipment to somewhere else because of the noise or the sun. And no one ever gave me attitude. No one ever was like, hey, I got to be somewhere in 2 hours, so can we hurry up? Or no one, it was, and not that that's what I expected, but even just like how people have this idea of the younger generation, you know, there was still a little bit of me also kind of be like, all right, let's see if I'm going to be able to count on these young adults that are going to be in my film. Like, I hope they realize how serious of a big deal this is for me, right? And they did. They all were so respectful, and just their energy and everything. And that was something that did surprise me, because I thought for sure something would happen, but no. And so that was really cool to kind of actually be like, hey, no, just like what everybody's saying, it doesn't necessarily mean that all these young adults act that way. Like, this is a perfect example. So that was something that surprised me. And the other thing is that, you know, some of them I had met in person because I've built rapport with them. And the ones that I hadn't, it's as if we had like had known each other forever too. And that was like really wonderful as well, is that they can also have this level of comfort, like as if they've known you forever, where I think a lot of adults feel like they might not have that sense of like emotional maturity or anything. And they do. I mean, they're just so self-aware. And a lot of them, just their EQs are just incredible. And again, it just surprised me.
I think that's a great thing to take away from that, because originally you were hoping to break down generational barriers between, you know, the boomers, even, you know, my generation and the Gen Z, because in Australia, Gen Z. I love Gen Z. I think it rolls off the tongue a lot easier than Gen Z. We'll move beyond that. Like I said, one of your original hopes and goals was to break down these generational barriers. How do you think the audience will be able to embrace Gen Z through what you've captured?
I'm hoping, and I do feel like this will come across when people see it, is they have more empathy for what they are actually going through. Because I still feel like so many older generations want to think that they have it much easier than they do. And it's not a competition of who had it harder, who has it, you know, not, it's not a competition at all. They have different obstacles. They have different barriers than what we had, and doesn't diminish anything that they're experiencing. And I think that's what's happening, is people want to diminish their experience. They don't want to validate it, because again, they think that they have it so much easier because they have technology. They have all these things doing things for them. But in the film, you'll see that if anything, so many of them feel like their childhood was robbed. They were robbed of their childhood because of it, because they get to see what, you know, their parents or grandparents experience, how we grew up in our childhood. And they're seeing more of that online. They're getting to see like what it was like to be in the 80s and the 70s and all these other decades. And they're realizing, wow, there's a lot that we wish we could have experienced as well, and we can't. And it's not our fault. They're not the ones that created. They will start creating, you know, things, but they didn't create social media or the phones. And so I'm hoping that people can acknowledge that and be like, okay, maybe I'm a little too harsh on the way I speak about this generation, or maybe I'm too harsh when I interact with them, assuming that they're like this, this, and this. Maybe next time I go to my local coffee shop and my barista, who's in, you know, early 20s or in high school, maybe I'll take the time to actually talk to them and ask them questions, and maybe I'll see that I have more in common with them than I thought. Like, that's what I'm hoping that people will do, is they'll walk away with a sense of, okay, maybe I need to be a little kinder and more compassionate.
As you may know, in December last year, 2025, the Australian government banned under 16s from being on social media, which is, I feel, is going to create its own issue. But having spoken with these teens/adolescents during your trip, what were you able to understand about how we might be able to protect them? Did they have any ideas about how things should change for children today?
I think they do want to see better regulation. Like, I was telling someone that I almost feel like they're going to be the boomers, like where the boomers were, you know, the hippies, Woodstock, peace and love. Like, they also felt like they were literally going to change the world. And I feel like they have that same kind of idea. But at the same time, the boomers that were all the hippies changed the world. They kind of swung them onto the other side of the pendulum. I feel like Gen Z is kind of like that, where at some point they're going to be the ones putting regulatory measures on AI, on all of these things, because a lot of them have younger siblings, and these siblings are stuck to their iPads, and their siblings don't go outside, and their siblings are like, and they're seeing it. And I think they're realizing, oh gosh, if this is what's happening to my siblings, what is it going to look like when I have kids? You know, they're starting to realize that they want to kind of hold on to some traditions, you know, things from the past. And I think that's what's going to happen, is they're going to be the ones then kind of putting some regulations into place so that it doesn't get out of hand. I mean, that's just kind of how I felt talking to them.
That's really refreshing to hear, actually, because they're not just faced with AI. There's a whole legacy we're leaving them to be challenged by. We talk a lot about anxiety in that generation and the successive generations. And we also talk a lot about the fact that, you know, they don't really have hope for the future. That bothers me and that concerns me because there are things that we can do, particularly around reversing climate change and, you know, returning the planet to a better system, an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. How did they share their view of the future with you? I mean, was that something that came up about their concerns for mental health and the planet?
Oddly enough, they all, I would say the majority, I think maybe every single one of that I spoke to has hope. That's what's really cool is if they have hope, then why shouldn't we have hope if they're our future, right? It's like they acknowledge that it is going to be difficult, but at the same time, they refuse to give up. They also feel like they can make a difference and that they could be part of the change. So I feel like that's why so many, and this is another, you know, kind of thing around Gen Z is like, oh, none of them want to have 9-to-5 jobs. None of them want to actually work. Like none of them want to go to the office. And it's not so much that, it's more of they don't understand why go to a job 9-to-5 every day that you're miserable in and you're not even getting paid enough to like even survive when you can do the alternative and try to do something that you're passionate about. Be an entrepreneur if that's what it is. Live with purpose. Like they're kind of like, you've got this and that. We choose to live with purpose. We choose to do something different because we don't see the value in really kind of doing this thing that society has been telling us to do. Not only that, they're like, not only are you guys telling us to do what we're supposed to be doing, we do it and it still isn't good enough. You know, like a lot of these, there were several like college graduates that had said, I got the grades in high school. I got into the school. I got, you know, good grades in the college. I graduate from college. And guess what? I still can't get a job in what I want to do. So, you know, like we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, what we're told that your society says we should do. And that still isn't working out for us. So again, maybe we should try something different that actually will make us content, because that's another word they use too. They understand contentment. A lot of us didn't understand that.
No.
It's okay to be content. You don't have to be happy all the time. You can be content and that's okay. And that's what they want.
That sounds like a really great, but I'd like to be content. I'm sick of being on that roller coaster of up and down and happy and sad and, you know, depressed and okay.
Like I finally feel like I'm in a place of contentment, and it's a really nice, it can be boring. It could feel like maybe mundane, boring, but at the same time, I'm like, no, I'm okay in that space now, where before I wasn't, because I thought it meant like, oh, I'm unproductive. I'm a loser. No, it just means that you're living a life of balance. Like you're not all over the place. Like I used to be.
That sounds like one of the best things to take away from this film already. So I'm excited to see it. I was watching I think it was a TEDx or some sort of presentation recently where this man based his whole thing around we're asking the wrong question of that generation. Mm. And yeah. A lot of, and especially the boomer generation, right, have this saying that's been passed on generation to generation, and I think even to some degree Gen X use it, and it's what's wrong with kids these days, right? And this was the question he based this whole thing on, and he said, no, we're asking the wrong question. It should be, what can I do to support you? Whatever it is, you know, it's not what's wrong.
I called with a Gen Zer before this, and I said, how can I be of service? Like, because she was asking me, I'm like, I just want to know, how can I be of service? Like, how can I help? And a lot of adults are like, why would I do that? For like, why wouldn't you? Again, they're our future. Like, wouldn't you want to invest in a better future?
Exactly. And then, you know, you get this thing where the older generations complain about being redundant and that, you know, what they've learned and what is no longer being shared. And yet they have the option to be a mentor to younger generations. I do it all the time. You know, if people want to learn how to do what I do or know what I know, I'm happy to mentor young people. And I offer. It's funny, though, it doesn't always come full circle where they actually accept my offer. But it's nice to be able to say, hey, how can I help you? You know, What do you want to know that I can share with you? Mm-hmm. And it's not about money. It's not about an exchange. It's just about being there. And as you say, they are our future leaders. So what do we want? What sort of leaders do we want them to be?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
What were you able to glean out of this? What sort of leaders do you think they're going to be?
I think they're going to be amazing leaders. Obviously, you know, we don't group everyone, you know, because they're, every generation has a rotten apple here and there. So, but the ones that I've spoken to and the ones that I've been lucky and blessed enough to have on my podcast, every single one of them is incredible in their own way. Where I, that's again, that's why I walk away always feeling so hopeful and inspired, because I'm like, okay, if these are our, if this is our future, like, we're good.
When are you hoping people can actually see this documentary?
I think the final cut should be done by the end of February, but then, you know, music, that's the thing. Credits, like, I don't know how that works. So I'm hoping maybe March. I don't want to say it, but in the several months, because I want it to, you know, be really good.
What should people look out for, and where can they find you?
Okay, well, they can find me on Instagram, LinkedIn. They can Google me, because I have a website, rock.vision, named after my business. And that's like a one-stop shop. And the documentary is going to be, is called I Hear You Gen Z. So we still have yet to figure out again, like what platform it'll be on, if I'm going to enter it into film festivals, we'll see. But if you go to my website, I'll make sure that everything's updated on there.
I'll make sure to send people there. It'll all be in the show notes. Raquel Boras, it's always a pleasure. And I cannot wait to revisit this story to see what the reaction's like and just how much success you receive with this generational story of hope.
I love that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Gen X mom of two Gen Z kids, Raquel Boras, founder of Ruck Vision, Ruck the Boat Show, and Rated Gen Z podcast. Gen Z isn't asking to be rescued, they're asking to be understood. If we're willing to take responsibility for the systems we built, from social media to constant connectivity, then we also have a responsibility to sit with the consequences alongside young people, not above them. What we teach our children isn't just in what we say. It's in whether we listen, whether we make space, whether we become the adults we once needed. And maybe that's where healing between generations truly begins. I'm Kim Clyden. Thank you so much for listening today. I look forward to bringing you another riveting conversation next week. Don't forget, you can connect with me across social media and on my website. You'll find all those details in the show notes, or go to kimclyden.com. That's kimkleidon.com. Until we're together again, be the change you want to see.